I'm here with Charlie Hooker at the Bloomberg Space. Charlie, you've just performed your piece Stroll On here, and I'd like to begin by talking about the background to the piece.
Well, the background to this particular piece is obviously the show 1979, which is revisiting work that was happening in London in that year. Basically, I was in the Hayward Annual at that time. So Stroll On was written for the Hayward Annual and for the Hayward Gallery, based upon the acoustic and the auditorium size and the layout of the particular space there. The floor drawing was based upon the grid system that was on the floor of the Hayward. For here, I've transposed that onto the floor grid, you know, the tiles that are at the Bloomberg space here. So in both situations, the drawing is based upon the existing grid in the space. At the time when the original was done, it was very much about being site-specific and using the internal architecture and using the acoustics, therefore, of the space for which the piece was written. So at the time, I would go to different venues, write different pieces for different places.
Your work has always combined sculpture, environment, performance. I mean, you have performers in your pieces, and, of course, sound. So can we talk, first of all, about the very specific sound in this piece?
The sounds are produced by what are called chime bars, which basically are made for primary school kids. Most people are familiar with them from when they were at school. And the work then, you know, in 1979, and also importantly now, is deliberately got an innocence about it, something which literally anyone could do. I mean, it was part of the political point within the work at the time, was that I didn't ever use musicians. When I started doing this work in the first place, it was very much about trying to link different areas of the arts together, so theatre with visual art, with sound, and so on, and also to try and include members of the public who wouldn't normally go into a gallery. Nowadays, it's like very popular to go to galleries, but it wasn't in the 70s, you know, and people were scared. You know, there was a feeling among a lot of young artists then who wanted to try and bring people in or go out and do stuff in locations other than traditional galleries. If you analyse the work, this particular piece, really there's a kind of simplicity to it which builds and builds and builds, so that it becomes quite complex and has a much kind of deeper resonance. So it's a deliberate kind of duality between what sounds almost kind of pretty but becomes much more meditative and much a stronger structure.
Now, if we talk about what the work actually looks like on the floor, because what you've got is almost like a maze on the floor that you use as part of the performance. Both you and the performers use it as they walk around these notations. You then use chalk to cross off parts of your piece.
In terms of how the piece is constructed, there's four performers plus me, so there's five people. Four performers are walking around to grids side by side, and I, as you say, add instructions for them on the floor. Basically, when I started working in this way, I needed to find a system which could be understood by anybody, but also it was very important for the viewer to be able to predict what was going to happen and to watch the thing unfold. And this came about really through right early on in my career, going to see a friend who was a violinist in a youth orchestra, and I had to give her a message, and they were rehearsing, and I had to walk through the orchestra. And the kind of stereo effect of doing that is quite extraordinary. So I thought it would be interesting to use a spatial construction to put the audience in various locations in relation to the performing, so that you'd hear things in a particular way. So that meant doing something three-dimensional, which could also become a code or a language as well, a visual, musical language. So out of that need, develop this system of grids, which are basically dividing up space and time. It's a way of linking a visual rhythm to an audible rhythm and creating something which is quite a hypnotic sound. Now, in terms of this actual piece, what happens is, as I chalk out a mark for the performers, I also write it in to a piece of manuscript on the floor, which is set out like a spiral. And the spiral is governed by the floor size of the space and the grid size of the tiles on the floor. So in this particular spiral, each bar of music and each kind of section of the spiral is 50 centimetres long, which happens to be the tile size in this particular space. So the spiral goes round and round into the centre, and each time I add a cross on the outside grids, I write what I've done, what they're playing on the spiral, and then when I start playing, I'm actually gradually replaying what happened at the start. So as the thing unfolded, so I'm overlaying that construction with what you're hearing as a kind of general sound. Yeah? And halfway through, there's a key change, which is the point at which I start playing, and I use that as a device quite a lot. I saw them quite sculpturally. If you try and visualise the sound, what you would get is a kind of a graph which starts off at nothing, goes up to a peak in the middle, and then goes down to nothing again at the end. And quite often I would do something in the pieces that I was writing at the time where midway through there'd be a change. Might be a lighting change, might be a sound change or something, which would signify the kind of pivot of the piece.
I'd also like to ask you what it feels like reconstructing something, because you made the piece a long time ago now, and you've remade it. I mean, obviously, you're using different performers. How does it feel doing that?
When I got approached, I was very nervous, and initially I said no, and then I thought about it. I thought, well, it would be interesting to see if the work still stands up, really. So I said yes, and thought about how I might work it. And the people that have taken part tonight are ex-students of mine in sculpture and music. They're a different generation to me, but they are really interested in that whole late 60s, 70s, early 80s period. And I thought, you know, because you think they'd just be interested in digital, but there's people working across or between digital and analogue media. There's a lot of people, you know, who are interested in revisiting basic analogue, the White Stripes, for instance. And soon after the first rehearsal, hearing them get really into it and really liking it, that made me feel quite positive and realise that actually there was something a bit more there than I perhaps thought there might be. The more we rehearsed, the stronger it became as a piece, and I'm very pleased with the outcome. Really.
I'd also like to revisit other pieces you've made, Wavewall, and then move on perhaps to Twins, as two rather different works that you made.
If you think about all of my work, really, from the early 70s through to now, it's all really to do with cycles of some description and rhythms and linking media, maybe sound and vision, and structures. The last full performance that I did was in 1990 in Warsaw, and I sort of came back to England having done that and thought I wanted to make work where the viewer could kind of perform with the work rather than sit down and watch something, could actually walk around something and engage with it in a more physical way. So Wavewall was the first piece that I did in that respect. I'm interested in linking art and science. I often go to the Science Museum to research things, and I had thought about what I could use as a metaphor to deal with time passing and movement and linking in a visual rhythm to an audible rhythm, and the obvious thing that came to mind was a pendulum. I mean, Wavewall is based upon natural waveforms and man-made waveforms, but not waveforms that we hear every day. So the wind, the sea, and so on, and also radio waves and things that are just normal, which have been sampled and made into tapes, which play on three ghetto blasters, which swing throughout the space. And they swing out of sync with one another deliberately. They play for the duration of the installation, which might be, say, 2 months on auto reverse and so on. They never come back in sync again. The whole thing is cycling and changing all the time. And on the wall are drawings which relate to the sound structure that you hear on each particular tape. That piece, to me, is a very important piece, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of a bridge between performance and sculpture. And Twins came out of that, in as much as I went to the Science Museum and came across this extraordinary thing, which was this charred, burnt wooden bowl, and beside it a crystal ball. This was an early version of what is still used by the Met Office, and called a sunshine recorder. And a sunshine recorder is a very simple, very elegant device which measures the amount of ambient sunlight in any one day, or direct sunlight, actually. But it works like a magnifying glass would work. So the sun comes out and goes through the crystal ball, and as it travels across the sky, it will burn an arc into whatever's behind it. Now, nowadays, they use special card, which is kind of flame-proof, and it will just smoulder a track. The card is calibrated, you know, it can read off how many hours sunshine there's been. But when they first did it, they left the bowl out for a year. So if you imagine the sun travelling across the sky every day, and as it goes up and down, depending on the season, it will burn an arc lower or higher in the bowl. So you end up with half a charred bowl, which just looked extraordinary. I started using the weather and the sun in particular to make graphs using this same device, which could then be translated into sound using digital and analogue media. What happens in twins is it's a two-part sculpture which looks a bit like two astronomical objects. The point of it really is to relate the sky to the ground. So it's made of granite, so it's made of very earthy materials, but it's dealing with the sky. And on each surface of the pieces of granite is a bronze plate which has got etched into it the burn marks from the sun. And those arcs of using audio software have been translated into sound, and the sound emanates from inside the sculpture, but it hasn't got any speakers. Each piece of granite and bronze becomes what's called a transducer, and a transducer is a bit like a magnetic pickup which fits onto the back of the granite and bronze panel and makes the whole surface become a loudspeaker. So when you go up to the piece, I mean, you can hear this kind of faint sound emanating from it, and you can actually feel it if you touch the sculpture. And it's also got solar triggers on the surface of each piece of granite, so that typically at night time it's quiet, but when the sun rises, as the sun goes across the sculpture, as it hits each surface, so each piece of sound fades up. And if it's a bright sunny day, it's loud. If it's a dull day, it's quiet. The sun is controlling how it sounds. So it's another cycle, really. It relates very much to the piece To Stroll On, I think. It's just another cycle. You know, one's about seeing human beings walking around the cycle, the other one's about the sun cycling around, or the earth cycling.
I think it's very interesting that in the last, particularly in the last 10 years, there has been a huge reinvigorated interest in this phenomenon called sound art, which as yet doesn't have a fixed art history, because in a sense it's coming out of, as you rightly said in the beginning, out of performance from the 60s and 70s, and then it's coming out of digital media, it's coming out of analogue, and it's coming out of also what you're doing, which is this marriage across media.
Now, I find it really exciting. I think what's happening in the art world now is very good. I find it particularly interesting when I'm teaching, as well as when I'm working in my studio, how there's lots of marriages of different disciplines going on. I mean, right now, people will think nothing of marrying a building to a sound. You know, and I've spent a lifetime of work really looking at those kind of interfaces and thinking how interesting it is if you kind of break down those barriers or fuse things together. Well, if you've got something in bits of information in ones and zeros, whatever the information is, you can translate into anything else. So if you take a meteorological chart of rainfall, you can take that data and you can make it into a piece of music, into the surface of a building, into anything. And I think the fact that more and more people are interested in those kinds of fusions, and you know, you get bands doing stuff, you know, with artists and vice versa. I think it's very interesting.